Thank you, Jeff. Good morning. I'm delighted to be here. What I'm going to do is summarize our approach to reinventing population health. And my basic message, if you take anything home from this presentation in the next 20 minutes, is that it's more about strengthening public health infrastructure to meet the future challenges that have already emerged, such as the chronic disease burden that we're facing. If we don't, we're going to be met with an economic burden that will be devastating. So I hope throughout my presentation I can reinforce this basic message and challenge that we all face. So I have no disclosures. This slide is a summary of the percentage of population greater than 80 years in selected countries and regions. Note in the bottom line, see if I can use my pointer, the variation with Bolivia compared to other countries in our region, and also data from Europe. So we do see rapid growth, but it varies by country. This summarizes the situation in the region of the Americas. On the vertical axis, you see age groups, and then the percentage population that falls in those age groups, with blue being male and the orange being female. Comparing 1950 on the left and the situation more recently in 2010. And you see how that proportion has greatly changed with more elderly population. This change, though, is not similar in all countries, again highlighting the variance that we experience in the Americas. As defined by the World Bank, we're the region of the greatest disparities. On the left, you see data from Cuba, 2010, with, again, the vertical axis being the age groups, the blue being male, the orange being female, compared to Nicaragua in 2010. So you see Nicaragua being a country with a much younger population. What I'm going to do in the next three slides is show you three different scenarios that we're encountering with the demographic transition leading to a related epidemiologic transition. This slide, these are data from Paraguay showing the percentage of non-communicable diseases that you see in red, and then in light purple or gray, those due to infectious disease. Injuries are yellow, and then not defined in that very light aqua blue. And you see that the chronic disease burden has existed for several years in Paraguay and countries like Paraguay, Chile, Argentina. So that's one scenario that we have in the Americas. Then a second scenario reflecting the situation in more middle-income countries. These are data from Mexico, but you would see a similar pattern if you were to do this analysis in Brazil, Colombia, Costa Rica, or countries like Venezuela, where the emergence of a chronic disease has occurred going back to the late 1950s, 60s, where we see the situation today, greater than 75% of those deaths are due to chronic disease, and in some countries at nearly 80%. And then we have a third situation, countries that are low-income countries, the poorer countries of our region, but such as Paraguay, Ecuador, Guatemala, Peru would probably fall in this category. These are data from Guatemala, and you see the emergence of chronic disease occurring more recently, more in the mid-late 90s, and existing progressing to the situation today where infectious disease still has a high proportion of the causes of death, but chronic disease has indeed emerged. So these countries have a struggle, a dual burden, more so than other countries. The global disease burden due to chronic disease, summarized in 2008, 36 of the 57 million deaths were caused by chronic disease. In a recent study by Harvard, if we do nothing, by 2030, the cost globally would be $30 trillion. $30 trillion. Enormous. To prevent that, if we were to invest globally at $11 billion per year with a basic package of best buys that are cost-effective, that have been tested and we know work, we could avert that huge economic challenge. In the Americas, these are data from 2007 showing the proportion of chronic diseases due to the top four, where you see cardiovascular disease, cancer, chronic respiratory disease, and diabetes. I want to point out that in the Americas, with a population of nearly 940 million people, 250 million, or one quarter of our people of the region, have some form of chronic disease. We now know that today 139 million or so are overweight or obese, 145 million are smoking, and so we have some very prevalent risk factors that are contributing to this adverse outcome. These are data, again, from our region, the Americas, showing the prevalence of overweight and these comparing the data from the Americas to other regions of the world. And the point is I want to make is that we lead the world. The data are broken down by men and women, and so basically we have emerged as a leader in with this problem. These data are from the Americas, showing the estimated obesity prevalence above a BMI of 30%. I'm going to assume that everybody in the room knows what BMI is. I was the other day in a meeting with it was a workshop of reporters, and I had to go into great detail to be sure they understood that. And you can see that these are by selected countries in our hemisphere, showing, first of all, there is a great prevalence, but that women are disproportionately affected. Key point. Another key point is that we know, although individual risk factors, by the data I cited from the performer's life, are important, we're beginning to understand that the social determinants of health are by far a major challenge for us, and they probably contribute more to this problem than the individual risk factors. Because imagine yourself a child living in poverty. You may be educated about what are healthy food choices, but if in your neighborhood you have no choice and no park to exercise and play in, then it's difficult to control that situation or prevent childhood obesity, which would lead to chronic disease. Education, I'll show you data. Access to healthy food choices, as I mentioned, the urbanization, and the opportunity that we have is to intervene across the life spectrum. We know that mothers who breastfeed are less likely to have obese children, and they themselves are less likely to be obese. So the interventions have to be targeted across the life spectrum, and it has to be integrated. We can't just be focusing on childhood obesity. It has to be a package of things that I'll highlight later. So, as our director likes to say, it took us decades to get where we are to be faced with this challenge. It's going to take us decades and a lot of commitment to reverse it. I don't think that it's any coincidence that, as I mentioned, that the poorest states in the United States are the most obese, or vice versa, the most obese states are the poorest. Again, highlighting the importance of looking at the social determinants of health. And you can see that states like Mississippi, Alabama, West Virginia, they're on both sides of the column there. And we could do this analysis in any country in the Americas, and we would have a similar outcome. We know that boys smoke more than girls, but that may be changing. The point I wanted to show is that there is some data emerging that may suggest that the emergence of smoking among girls in our region is going to be a challenge that we're going to have to tackle. This shows the percentage of adolescents 13 to 15 years of age by sex who smoke in 13 selected countries over 2000 to 2007. And note at the bottom the countries Haiti, Uruguay, Mexico, suggesting that we may be looking at a major change. The alcohol impact on the left, looking at deaths only, but we factor in quality of life by a measurement of both mortality and quality. The Dalles, you see how alcohol emerges as a huge factor in this outcome. These are data from 2005. And as I alluded to at the beginning, this is what Brazil is looking at. Note that in 2008, the billions in health spending, and then what's projected by 2050, where it would be more than double. That's an incredible challenge. And virtually all countries are going to have similar challenges to face. So although it may seem daunting, the burden that I outline, the challenges such as social determinants, the prevalence of risk factors, there is some good news because we do have an opportunity to think strategically. And as Tom Frieden likes to say, the quickest way to save lives is to address tobacco. And so there are some relatively inexpensive interventions that have to do with policy and laws that can immediately save lives and help avert that economic burden that we're facing. This is a calculation that we did in the Americas. If we could reduce the prevalence of tobacco use by 20%, reduce the average salt intake by only 15%, and then reach 60% of those folks who already have chronic disease with basic medicines like hydrochlorothiazide for hypertensive patients, we have an opportunity in the next 10 years to avert 3.4 million deaths. Now, we're all going to die, but we'll live longer, and perhaps more importantly, we'll live healthier, more productive lives. So that's the strategic opportunity that we have at relatively low cost. The provision of medicines will cost something, but there are some very simple things that we can do immediately as we begin to galvanize, mobilize the necessary resources to avert future economic burden. You all know, as Jeffrey alluded to at the beginning of the UN high-level meeting, the second organized at such a level by the United Nations, the first, as you know, is AIDS, and you saw what happened afterwards with the availability and access to antiretroviral therapies to HIV/AIDS patients. We're optimistic that this high-level meeting will also contribute to impact. The challenge for us is to maintain and augment the momentum going forward. So we, from this meeting, have some areas of work that by 2012 we'll have a monitoring framework. In the Americas, we have such a framework. We have a regional plan of action. We have targets. We have indicators that are budgeted with activities. So there is a plan that is being implemented. We're going to strengthen it, and we look forward to working with the rest of the world as they catch up with this challenge of identifying targets, indicators, and such that make sense for their situations. By 2013, national multiple sector policies should have been adapted and begun to be implemented and strengthened. By 2014, the assessment of progress and a comprehensive review, and I hope that reporting back to such a high-level body for accountability. So I alluded to what we do at PAHO. We're a technical organization. We're not a funding organization, but we do provide technical expertise to help countries develop their policy, to develop their plans of action, their national plans of action that are so very much linked to the regional plan that allows us to coordinate across borders, the surveillance, the monitoring and evaluation, the special studies that we're involved with, other implementation strategies such as health promotion and the integrated management. But we're focused on prevention. That's our area of strength, particularly with the monitoring and evaluation. Just to, with a few additional slides, highlight again the disparities. These are data showing maternal mortality ratio per 1,000 live births by race in the United States and ethnicity in Guatemala, indigenous and non-indigenous peoples in Guatemala, data from 2000, and the data from the U.S. 2005. So you clearly see the disparity. And virtually in every country could be shown to have similar challenges. In the Americas, if we look at the relative risk of death among the poorest compared to the wealthiest, these are the relative risks: Latin America, Caribbean, Eastern Asia, Southern Asia, Northern Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, the Central Asia, and the Caucasus, and other. You see where we emerge, and this highlights the challenge we have as the region of the greatest disparities. Children born among the poorest are three times more likely to die compared to children born among the wealthiest. We estimate that we have probably over 180 million people living on less than $2 a day in the Americas. So I don't show this slide to put a feather in the hat, PAHO. I show this slide to note the point that The Lancet made when they came out with an editorial on our recent Directing Council meeting in September, noting that the Americas, quote, a region to watch when it comes to its efforts to tackle both infectious diseases and newer burdens arising from increasing development, such as non-communicable diseases. I show this slide to put us at task. I show this slide to really challenge what we do at PAHO in the next 10, 20 years and what countries do, because we do have an opportunity using the strategic planning and implementation of the best practices to make a difference and avert that economic burden. So in summary, we recognize that chronic diseases are a major challenge. They disproportionately affect females, the poor, and the less educated. Because there are multiple causes and risk factors, the response is an all-of-society approach. It can't be just limited to health. It has to be all of society. Prevention and control of infectious diseases must be sustained. We have the unfinished agenda of malaria, HIV. We must sustain the gains chief through immunization, but then balance that with the chronic disease. We are concerned that of all the MDGs, I did not show you data, but I did show the maternal mortality data slide, that we are not on target. And so that is going to be a challenge for us to meet that MDG target. Obesity is a clear precursor to the chronic disease causes and is a problem that begins prenatally and in childhood, as I mentioned, and we have various ways to work and help the work of the governments. So in conclusion, we have an unprecedented opportunity to save more lives more quickly with the known interventions that work and focus on prevention. The alternative, complacency, is simply unacceptable. Thank you very much.